Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast. Here with your hosts, Jacob Smedley,
Sam Beth,
Justin Reedham,
Peter Almonte,
and Nathan Romanoff.
Our topics today include the Super Bowl is upon us. A week from today, as of recording, the Eagles will be playing the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. We'll break it down for you and the rest of the playoffs. And a new cover athlete for MLB The Show will break it down, and news and rumors around the NBA ahead of Thursday's trade deadline. Now, here's Seth. Wait a second. Justin, I'm looking at the script, not the one the NFL gave me, but the one Justin gave me, and here he's going first. Justin, the NFL playoffs, the Super Bowl on Sunday. What's going on, man?
Well, Jacob, the Kansas City Chiefs are playing the Philadelphia Eagles. It's a poorly written script, if you ask me, of course, but let's start talking about it, though. First thing we got to do is we have to talk about how we got here, right? Of course. Because you can't just say, oh, we're here, without saying how we got here. So let's start on the NFC side, because that's a lot more, you know, less depressing.
Especially for you. Especially for you.
So, of course, on the wild card side, just last week, the Philadelphia Eagles played against the 49ers and defeated them pretty handily, I would say. Final score, what was it, 31-7? It just didn't seem like the Niners put anything together. In fairness to the Niners, they had a very catastrophic injury on the first series of the game, and then another very catastrophic injury not too long after, which very much impeded their chances of winning that game. Jacob, I see you smiling there. What are your comments?
Well, I'm smiling because here on Zoom, Peter's camera went out. I don't know if it's when you mentioned the 49ers, you know, reason for being in the game. But I wanted to mention, too, and, you know, just seeing, oh, you know, and I know we'll get to this. Oh, the Eagles' road to the Super Bowl was, you know, like the 2017 Patriots and a very weak road. How many people were saying, oh, the Giants with Daniel Jones are going to beat them in the first round and expose them? And then what happened? And then you go to the 49ers. I understand. I understand. All right. But then you go to the 49ers. And yes, okay, it is fair. Brock Purdy got hurt. They had to throw in Josh Johnson, who is not a starter. They had Christian McCaffrey at one point putting on the armband. But the Hassan Reddick hit, like, it's no fault other than the Eagles being good at the pass rush that hurt him. Like, I mean, I don't know what else, like, you can't put that on the, oh, yes, I know, you know, their, you know, quarterback got hurt, but they can't, you know, ease up the game and let the Niners back in to make, like, it look like a close game. That's
not
what I'm saying.
Of course,
yes.
Not. I think that I'm just, the point I make here is that I would never have said that the Giants were going to expose the Eagles. The Eagles were clearly
hearing that on TikTok, Instagram, you know, from all other media.
Well, anybody that says
media
that doesn't really know a lot about football, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know? No, yeah, I'm not. Yeah.
Like, even our resident Giants fan knew that they were going to lose that game. Like, yeah. I'll be completely honest. But for the 49ers one, I was hoping to see a close game for the Eagles, because this entire season, the Eagles have run the table against soft defenses and soft offenses. And it's just like, I wanted to see them finally get tested. And then they go up against a tough defense, and they struggled for the first half of the game. But after, you know, the Niners' offense had gotten taken out of it, there was just no shot. Everybody knew it. It was over. And it was just disappointing.
Can we point out the fact that no team can control injuries? No team can control how the game runs. So, sure, all these people are making excuses. Oh, the Eagles only won because of this. Only because we win of this. Only came in because of this. What about, like Jake said, the Eagles are winning because their pass rush is nightmarish? How about the Eagles are winning is because Jalen Hurts has gotten 20 times better with his accuracy in his pass game, and he can run the ball like a nightmare, or the RPO that the Eagles have been running all season long is so unpredictable, it's nuts. So why don't we stop with all the crap excuses that the entire world is trying to make up and actually admit the Eagles have a good roster, had a good season, and they deserve to be where they're at?
Listen, it's fair, and I hear a lot of the chatter that you guys do. Everybody's saying, oh, soft schedule, cupcake road to the Super Bowl. But you can't say that. Listen, these guys, you're playing in the NFL. To go 14-3 in the regular season is tough, man. It doesn't matter what your schedule's like. It's not easy to win. And the Eagles did it. They put it together. It's not like they, and it's not like they, you know, didn't face any challenges. They had to face Dallas twice, and, you know, Dallas's defense is one of the best in the league, definitely. It's, you know, you have to earn your way there. And looking at the 49ers game, yes, Brock Purdy went down. Listen, the story of, you know, the cursed quarterback in San Francisco continues this year. It just happens, but it was because of the Eagles' defense. I mean, it was good pressure, and it happened, you know. There's no control over it. It was good defense, like the Eagles have played pretty much all season and all postseason. So when it comes down to it, yeah, the Eagles deserve to be here. They're here for a reason. And, you know, I think we're going to get a good game.
And here's the thing. Like, I was just looking at Instagram where Brandon Ayuk said something about if it was any other scenario against Patrick Mahomes, the Eagles are going to struggle to get exposed. Look, sure, Patrick Mahomes is 90 times better than Brock Purdy because of experience, obviously, and it's Patrick Mahomes. But also, I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the other quarterback's name that played against the Eagles. But
Josh Johnson.
Yeah, sorry. But, I mean, Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. He's undeniably an amazing quarterback who could do great things. It'll be a tougher matchup for the Eagles' defense on Super Bowl Sunday because of the weapons that Patrick Mahomes has, as in Travis Kelce, who still, I mean, is an unblockable tight end. He's going to go into the Hall of Fame for how good he is. However, this is the challenge that everyone's been saying the Eagles need to prove themselves. Well, here it is. You have no excuses at this point. And if they win, sure, they're going to say, oh, Patrick Mahomes' ankle wasn't okay. But stop the excuses. You got Patrick Mahomes. You got wide receivers who have proven themselves to be really good tools on that offense. Valdez-Scantling, Juju Smith-Schuster, Travis Kelce, all those three guys have been weapons. Isaiah Pacheco in the backfield, an amazing running back who's futile to that offense. So I think it's really going to come down to which defense can stop the other offense.
Yeah, well, let's take a look over on the other side of things now. The AFC Championship game where the Cincinnati Bengals were against the Kansas City Chiefs. And as we all know, the Chiefs pulled out a very close game, 20-23. It was one I felt the Chiefs needed because they have been playing very bad, very poorly against the Bengals every single time they've played them the last 2-3 seasons. So it was one that I really think they needed to, you know, kind of say, hey, you know, Joe Burrow, you don't own us. We're the team to beat in the AFC. And they proved that they were. And I think it was a great game. It was a really good game to show that Patrick Mahomes is a tough guy playing through that high ankle sprain. And, you know, he's still amazing.
How do you guys feel about the refereeing during that game?
I feel like they made the calls. I think some of it was bad earlier on. To be fair, didn't watch the entire game as intently as the previous one. I will admit that. But at the end, you can't make that mistake if your Osai pushing Mahomes out of bounds. I mean, that's a good call. That was a call that had to be made, and that cost him. I mean, I of course, you know, the whole idea with the officiating, you know, having an impact of the game, it's been real these past few years. Not only this game, but other games that we've seen where, you know, certain calls are really making an impact on the game. But, you know, I didn't think it was that bad. The Chiefs really came back. Bengals had the lead, and they came back and proved that they were the better team, even amid all of those calls that took place. So to answer that question, I don't think it was as bad as some people made it out to seem.
Here's the thing also. I do like what the Bengals head coach said, where he said, we cannot put all the weight on this kid's shoulders. He's a rookie. I mean, yeah. That's a cardinal rule not to break in football, is don't touch the pass, Rabbi's out of bounds. Sure. But that cannot be the only play that you say that lost them the game. Because that's not football.
Other guys on the team made that put the Chiefs in good field position that set them up for points. So.
No, yeah, I agree with everything you said, Jake. Refs are human, man. We're all human. Mistakes are going to be made. They make the calls, you know, that they judge in their mind to be correct. And the one specifically you're referring to at the end of the game is, yeah, it's the right call. You can't, you know, push the quarterback once he's out of bounds. And I agree. I don't think that the officiating was as bad as some people made it out to be throughout both championship games, to be honest with you. And like you said, there's other plays in the game that led to the Chiefs, you know, being in that position to kick a field goal and win the game. And, you know, that's how it played out. You can't, you know, just say, lament the refs, you know. It's, no, it's the game, man, you know.
When the ref, when it comes to refereeing, you hate him, but you love him, right? You hate when, I mean, it's so much different on TV. We're watching it from a whole other perspective of the game. We're watching it from, like, a bird's eye view almost, right? Those referees are right here on those guys. It is so much harder for them to see what we see or try to make a fair call as fast as they need to. I think that we have to take in consideration, like, I hear all these people claiming and calling for robot refs. We have to consider, is that, because they tried that in the MLB a little bit, I think, with the robot umpiring, right, with the strike zones and stuff.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's still really sketchy and rocky, so how the heck are we going to robot referee a game that moves this fast all the time? Like, I mean, I know Jake watched, I don't know who else watched the Eagles game, but Devonta Smith's one-handed grab where he was going like this, is that a hurry-up signal, and he actually didn't catch it, but he knows he didn't catch it? Or is that a, we got to move, or I'm just celebrating, or what? Like, the referees didn't pick up on it, and nor did the 49ers coach pick up on it. But, you know, it's one of those things that, will robot referee say, hold up, hold on, no catch? Or do we need to just stick with the human side of things and say, you know what, it's football, but it's a human game, let's let humans play the game, humans officiate the game, and let's keep the tradition alive of keeping it American sport, you know? I think that we need to give referees more credit than we give them, but at the same time, I think, and I forget where I heard this, I think it was might have been on the Pat McAfee talk show, where they said, put referees through kind of like a training camp, like a summer camp, like a spring training, like the teams do, and refresh their memories on the rules and the boundaries and the limits. Distinctively say, this is roughing the passer. Distinctively say, this is what these calls need to be so that you can prevent those controversial calls that might end up costing championship games.
Yeah, I think it's definitely an interesting conversation, Peter, and, you know, one that's going to go back and forth for the league moving forward.
From that, let's move on to the big game, the mother of all sports, the Super Bowl, coming up on this Sunday, as Jacob mentioned, February 12th, 6:30, as always, Eastern Standard Time. It's going to be the Chiefs, the Eagles. Let's just dive into some of the statistics, all right? We have the Chiefs, of course, the best offense in the league in both points and yards. And they're going up against one of the best offenses in the league in the Eagles, both third in points and yards. But I think that, honestly, the offenses, they're not going to struggle as much as we might think. It's going to be a battle of these defenses. Who can stop the opposing offenses? These are great offenses. And, I mean, if you ask me statistically, it's probably going to be the Eagles that have an easier time. They have the second best defense in yards, and they have the seventh best defense in points per game, compared to the Kansas City Chiefs, who have, you know, yards against their 11th and points against their 16th. So it seems to me that the Eagles would be the easy answer with that pass rush and their, you know, pretty good secondary.
The Eagles' pass rush and their sack game has been undisputed this season. I mean, you talk about Hassan Reddick, Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox. These guys have been collapsing these offensive lines every single game. I mean, if you want to talk about consistency, that's what it is, right? So I think when it comes down to it, will the Chiefs' offensive line be able to hold them, this massive wave of Eagles defenders, the entire game? Because Patrick Mahomes doesn't always run with the ball, right? So will we be able to stop the pass game with a quick defensive collapse of the pocket? And will that cause Patrick Mahomes need to be quick on his feet?
But I totally get it, Peter. I think Mahomes on that ankle, it's definitely going to be, you know, something that really affects the game. And really, Mahomes' mobility, because we see how great Mahomes is at extending plays, especially against the Bengals. Jaguars, very apparent as well, when that first, second half, really was able to extend plays a lot to get guys like Kelce and others involved. I mean, I think that matchup's going to be huge. I'm going to go to the other side of the trenches and go to the Chiefs' defensive line against the Eagles' offensive line. In that Bengals-Chiefs game, the Chiefs were able to get pressure on Joe Burrow. Again, the Bengals, who improved their offensive line in the offseason, looked great through the regular season into the playoffs, but that game, again, guys like Chris Jones and that pass rush for the Chiefs really got after it. For the Eagles' offensive line, which is regarded as one of the best in the league, fronted by Jason Kelce, Lane Johnson, Landon Dickerson, Pro Bowlers on that line, how will they hold up? They fared all right against Nick Bosa and company in San Francisco, but I think the Chiefs, with Steve Spagnuolo, are going to bring it, and that's going to be the difference in the game.
Yeah, we'll just have to see. It's going to be a great game. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be one of the more exciting Super Bowls that we've had in the last couple of years, just because how fast-paced this can go with these two offenses and defenses. Like I said, or was trying to say earlier, it's going to come down to the defensive game. Who can stop whose offensive? Who can stop whose offensive rush first? Who can stop that push? Because, sure, not always offenses win games, but turnovers have an effect. Interceptions, picks, sacks, all those things. So I think this will be one of the more entertaining and higher scoring Super Bowls that we've seen in a while.
Yeah, speaking of those turnovers, I mean, the Eagles have been quite good when it comes to the turnovers this year. They were 5th in takeaways, 5th in giveaways, and 3rd overall. But the Chiefs, they kind of struggled in that area. You know, 22nd in takeaways. They were 19th in giveaways and 23rd overall. So that could be another area where you see kind of a divide, where the Eagles have a bit of, you know, an upside over the Chiefs. But at the same time, there is a bit of an X factor that Patrick Mahomes brings, where he is definitely the best quarterback that the Eagles have faced this season. Are they ready to face him yet? And I think we're going to get to see that answer on Sunday.
Exactly. But, you know, I do believe in a game like this, again, with two very high-powered offenses, I think turnovers, obviously, big in every game, but especially in the Super Bowl. I mean, you can't afford to give away possessions in a game of this high caliber. I believe that it will come down to a one, you know, score game in the end, two score game, you know, very close. It's going to be a close game, in my opinion, and those turnovers are costly. You know, those statistics are telling, and, you know, if you're a Chiefs fan, you got to hope, hold on to the ball. If you're an Eagles fan, you know, you got to hope, hey, let's get that ball and obviously hold on to it as well. But you're right about Mahomes. He's definitely, let's be honest, he's the best quarterback the Eagles have faced. He's going to be the best quarterback the Eagles have faced this year. And even if he's not 100% with the ankle, he's still, you know, the most talented quarterback in the league, to be quite frank. So it'll be huge, and especially, like you said, with the Eagles' pass rush and that defensive line against Kansas City's offensive line. If the Eagles can win that, you know, battle up front, you know, that's going to be a huge factor into how this game plays out. Because if they don't get pressure on Mahomes, then you're just giving them, you know, free range to sling the football, and he's got targets, you know.
Yes, Patrick Mahomes, amazing quarterback, got targets. Flip side, James Bradbury, Darius Slay, really got an eagle eye for that ball. So let it sling. Can the Eagle secondary hold it up?
I know, but if you're not getting pressure on him, then you're in for, you know, I'd be worried. If you're not getting pressure on the quarterback early, I'd be worried.
If you're not putting pressure on, you know, Patrick Mahomes, you're letting anything happen at that point.
There's only one way to beat Patrick Mahomes. It's with pressure. You try to throw a good secondary at him, he'll throw on it all day.
Yeah, and he's got the pieces. He's got Kelce. He's got Juju. He's got Valdes-Scantling. You know, he's got weapons. I get the Eagles. They do. They have a good secondary. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying. That pressure up front is key.
The thing is, he has played better secondaries and won. That's the crazy thing. Mahomes is great. The times that he loses are when he plays good D lines. So that's why the Eagles need to really have a good pass rush. Otherwise, they could be in for a tough night.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think one matchup as well you look into that is Travis Kelce. As Peter mentioned, Hall of Famer, best tight end in football, in my opinion. you know, I think many people's opinion as well. The way he's been working the intermediate routes, especially against the Bengals throughout his entire career, who's going to be the matchup for the Eagles linebacking core, which isn't, you know, regarded as one of the best. You have guys who are good at specific things, like TJ Edwards, very good on the run. Kaiser White, good on the run as well. With that, the Eagles cornerback safeties, is that a matchup that CJ Gardner-Johnson, more maybe of an undersized safety, was taken on that role from being the slot corner with the Saints, moved to safety with the Eagles. Is that his assignment as the team's, if you would, best safety, ball hawk guy? Is he going to be one-on-one with him? Are they going to double? How that matchup plays out, really in addition to the pressure, is going to be huge. Because if you're the Eagles, Juju is good. Valdez-Scantling is good. But I think you can afford leaving, if you trust your guys, Slay and Bradbury, you can leave them, for the beginning of the game, leave them on an island. Maybe double Kelsey, see how that goes. At least that's how I think they should approach it. Force Juju, Valdez-Scantling to be the guys that Mahomes is looking to.
I also agree, but at the same time, you know, and Jake, this is more a direct question to you because you follow the Eagles more than these guys do, but do you think that the Avonte Maddox injury will play a role, or do you think Rodrigo Blankenship? Sorry, no, I lied. That's not his name. I don't know why his name was in my head.
Reed.
Do you think he has the opportunity, or does he have the ability and experience to take up that role to play in such a big game? Because I mean, I think that he's proven himself over the last few weeks to be a solid secondary. Now he's not perfect in any way, and nor is any football player. I think Avonte Maddox's experience kind of boosts him up a little bit. However, I do like what Reed can do. So do you think this injury will play a role in this game?
Yeah, I think so. I believe Maddox did play in the NFC Championship game. I know that he ended up becoming a full participant in practice leading up to the game against the 49ers. I believe he played. Of course, he was still battling with that injury, but he was listed, you know, in the game on the, you know, the starting lineups that came out across the game. But to the point of Blankenship, I think he's been, you know, and not to call myself some Eagles reporter or anything, I'm not going to practice or seeing the reps, but what I've seen in the games is, you know, he's really becoming a very good ball hawk safety, opportunities, you know, contesting passes and opportunities like that. And I think talking about Blankenship and larger, you know, issues, is the moment, you know, too big for some of these Eagles players? You look at, again, the stage. Most of the team outside of that offensive line has not been to the Super Bowl before. So, again, that whole idea of the stage, lights being too bright at times, could that play a factor against a Chiefs team that, again, most of those players have been to the Super Bowl now not once but twice and have that experience in the big game?
Actually, many of them three times.
Many of them three times, yeah. So,
according to our resident Giants fan in this household, the Kansas City Chiefs have the best pass protection out of any team that the Eagles have faced. I don't know for sure. I haven't checked the stats, but, you know, that could also play a factor into it too. You know, maybe they put up a wall that's too hard to knock down.
It could be, but has that wall faced a pass rush like the Eagles before?
Yes.
Who? Who has a pass rush like the Eagles do?
They played San Francisco.
Their pass rush is not as good as the Eagles are.
That's the number one defense in the NFL.
Look at the number of sacks.
That's the number one defense in the NFL. I mean,
Justin.
I will bring up a stat that Peter hasn't mentioned that I know.
Please do.
70 sacks in the regular season. They finished third all time for the regular season. I will just mention that Peter can go on his little tangent that he's on right now. I just wanted to just put that stat in there, not to compare defenses or anything, but a very impressive feat for the defensive front seven.
Yeah, I agree. They're a great defense. I'm just saying the Chiefs are battle-tested. They've played against San Francisco, Buffalo, Jacksonville. They played against the best defenses in the league, and they've won many of those games.
Listen, man, it is what it is. I mean, they haven't faced the Eagles yet specifically, and, you know, everything's different. This is going to be one in the trenches. It always is. I mean, the Eagles have great pass rush. And again, we'll see what happens. You can't compare. I mean, things earlier in the season, the Chiefs, I believe they ended up killing the Niners when they played them earlier in the season.
They did. They absolutely destroyed
exactly. Yeah, so your point's kind of invalid. I mean,
well, I'm saying they're battle-tested. They've won those games.
Exactly, but I mean, it's just, it's a different time period, obviously, different players in the rotations, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen. I mean,
the Super Bowl is unlike any other game in the thing. I mean, you can throw out Peter's points about the Eagles and the points about the it's all what happens in the game. Some guys might, you know, crumble when the lights come on, or some guys that maybe, again, haven't been that much of a factor the entire season play the game of their life next Sunday and are standing on that podium with their team if they win. And I guess that's just how it goes.
You could have Patrick Mahomes or Jalen Hurts go down in that game, and then that changes everything.
That would change everything. Yeah. And that's a great segue, Jacob, to what I was about to ask next, which is, it's time to stop pussyfooting about the stats and the what-ifs and all this BS. What's going to happen? I want your score predictions. Give them to me.
All right. Are we going to, with the Eagles fans in the room, are we going to do a biased, non-biased prediction? Or how are we going to break this
biased,
down?
Non-biased, if you want. Yeah.
Okay.
I think we all have a little bit of bias, so sure. Biased, non-biased.
Okay. Bias, I would say Eagles 38-34. That's what I'm thinking. Non-bias. Oh man, non-bias. You see, I'm at that point. I haven't really thought about the score predictions yet. A week out, putting me on the spot. Non-bias. I think it's going to be a bit low scoring. 31-28. I'm still going to go with the Eagles. I know that's
non-biased. I know
you
can't go against them.
It's tough.
It's hard to go against
them. I was close. It was close. I was so close to picking the Chiefs in my non-bias, but I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that.
All right, well, let's get the second Eagles fan out of the way because y'all are going to call me biased anyway. My bias score would be 38-32 Eagles, higher scoring game. I think it's going to be higher scoring regardless. Non-bias, 34-31 Eagles. Field goal, game-winning, Jake Elliott. It's going to go out on the wire. At least 5 to 3 seconds left. Jake Elliott from 40-plus yards, game-winning field goal.
5 seconds left, but Chiefs have a chance. Mahomes can get the ball back.
Do not take any of Peter's words to a sports book, ladies and gentlemen,
yeah,
please.
I would not.
No. Not yet, at least.
Don't take any of our words to a sports book.
Yeah, yes, no, please stop.
My prediction? I don't think I really have go biased on bias here. I haven't put much thought necessarily to the score. I just, for certain reasons, I feel like this is, the Eagles are just going to win this one. I just, you know, we've had the Phillies and, you know, to a lesser degree, the Union, both in their respective World Series and championships this year, both losing. I just think that the Eagles are going to pull it out. I think it's going to be a very close scoring game. I'm going to go with a 27-24 final. Eagles win.
I actually did watch the Eagles play the 49ers. That was actually a really good game. I mean, obviously there were some injuries, but I really enjoyed watching it. I thought it was a good game, but I haven't really thought about too much about the Super Bowl like you guys. I am going to watch it. I do plan on watching it. I'm excited to see it. It's kind of like what Nate said, like Philadelphia kind of needs something to rejoice about because, oh, you better bleep me out. But I think the Eagles win. I'm going to go low scoring affair. I think I'm going to do 28-24. Kansas City tries to kick a field goal, tries to like kind of get up a little bit, but just has a hard time like in the last couple quarters getting back on top. But I'm giving it to the Eagles.
All right. Well, I've never been afraid to go against the grain. And of course, I know you all expect it. So I'm just going to give my biased opinion first. Biasly, I say 38-21 to the Kansas City Chiefs. It's possible if Mahomes has a great game and the Eagles can't stop him. But if what I think is going to happen is going to happen unbiasedly, I think it's going to be a lot closer. I'm thinking more around 27-21. The Chiefs win this one. It's going to come down to the last drive. They need a touchdown, and they just can't get it.
Well, the big game, whether you're celebrating at home or dropping grands to go out to Arizona to watch it in person, should be a great matchup nonetheless as we wrap up the football season. And next episode will most likely have off-season talk in it. It will have off-season talk in it. Now, here's Sam. That's Sam. Baseball season is still over. Pitchers and catchers don't report for another few weeks. But what is this news about the MLB The Show 23 cover, Sam? What do you got for us?
Yeah, so the MLB The Show just released their video game cover athlete for this year. And it's kind of a surprise to a lot of people. But to me, I don't really think it's that much of a surprise. I think it's a really good player. I think it's someone who deserves it, as kind of like a young, marketable player. It's Jazz Chisholm Jr., the second baseman for the Marlins. And the Bahamas native is making his debut on the cover of MLB The Show. A lot of people really wanted it to be Julio Rodriguez, who has become a very popular player in recent months, winning Rookie of the Year. And just being phenomenal for the Mariners team, who could make a deep playoff run. But I feel like Jazz Chisholm is just another young, marketable player that the MLB can make a decent amount of money on. He was an all-star in the 2022 season, played very well, and looks to be kind of making stardom on this Marlins team, who's kind of trying to put some pieces together in a very tough NL East division.
Now, Sam, I believe it is going to be center field Jazz Chisholm.
Oh, I did hear that.
Statement,
you're right.
Statement from Kim Ng, the GM for the Marlins, after trading for Luis Arraez from the Twins, who is a second baseman, first baseman by trade. Moving Gene Segura to third, it sounds like Joey Wendell to play short, and Jazz Chisholm, who debates going around the MLB community. Can you move a guy like Chisholm, who especially with the new rules, are going from second base to center field? I think he is athletic and is able to do it. It's just that the priority of infield defense is going to be that much more important. But going back to the cover athlete, great to see. I don't hate on video game cover athletes, but Julio Rodriguez played most of the season. Julio Rodriguez was on a postseason team. I'm just saying. Both are fine,
No, straight, I 100% agree with you. Julio Rodriguez was definitely the more marketable player for the cover. And a lot of people really thought it was going to be Julio Rodriguez. But the MLB decided to take a different approach. And I think this is, Jazz Chisholm, yeah, he was hurt a little bit. He didn't really play a lot. Now he's moving to center field. He's moving to a new position, which... I have seen a lot of different infielders being able to play like center field and stuff like that. Guys like Chris Taylor, Trey Turner has seen some action at center field a little bit, but I think this is kind of like Jazz's year to kind of just come back and like make a run for him. He's definitely one of the like not as like hype players to be on the cover of MLB The Show. I actually have a list of a bunch of other MLB The Show cover athletes here. One of them, including Ryan Howard, our very own Phillies first baseman, who was a three-time All-Star, a World Series champion. He was an MVP. He was Rookie of the Year and has won a couple Silver Sluggers, too. Good old Ryan Howard, the big piece, made his way to the show. He's the first ever Phillies player to be on the show. Then we also have Bryce Harper, who joined him in 2019. Obviously, Bryce Harper, the better player, a seven-time All-Star, two-time NL MVP, Rookie of the Year, Silver Slugger, and a Home Run Derby champ.
Really, Sam? No. I'm not going to ignore your comment of a better player. All right, I understand. Yes, of course, we hate to compare players that played for the same team. But, Sam, are you going to completely throw out the window those World Series years with the Phillies when Ryan Howard was on the team before he blew out his ACL? Are you... Are you ignoring that? Let me just get this clear before we move on.
I can't ignore that.
All right, I love Bryce Harper as much as the next guy.
I think Bryce Harper is going to have the better career.
Okay. All right, that's fine. That's fine. Just the way you worded that. I did word that a little weirdly,
but I think Bryce Harper is going to have the better career. Now, if the Phillies would have won the World Series this year, I would have put them as equal.
Okay. I mean, I don't want to get down the rabbit hole of comparing players.
I know.
But you're just comparing on team accolades now, are you?
A little bit, yeah. I'm not really comparing stats too much.
Go ahead, Sam. Pause, play, resume. Go ahead.
Now, who do I think I think the best current player, right now who's ever been on, like, MLB The Show, Miguel Cabrera. From MLB 14, the show. 12-time All-Star, AL MVP, triple crown winner for the AL, which you don't really see that too much. You don't really see a triple crown winner, at least anymore. It's been a while since we've seen some triple crown winners. Obviously, a World Series with the Marlins. 7-time Silver Slugger. I mean, Miguel Cabrera definitely right now out of the active players. And also a future Hall of Famer, too. What about Yasiel Puig? On MLB 15, the show. The only accolade he has, 2014 All-Star. Now, Yasiel Puig was a hype player back in 2015. He definitely had that swagger. He was definitely a decent player. But I think that Yasiel Puig is definitely the, like, least... just comparing accolades. Now, this is just comparing accolades. He's the not the greatest player to, like, ever be on, like, MLB The Show. Like, out of all of them here that I'm seeing in front of me, he's probably the worst.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, of course, we're basing off of accolades and, you know, I'm not trying to compare Jazz Chisholm to Yasiel Puig because I believe Jazz Chisholm will have a more prolonged and exciting career. But he is the guy that, just like Puig, has been put on the cover based on hype, and for the most part, because Jazz, you know, while he's played well and probably overall better than Puig did before, you know, he had that one great season before on the cover, but, you know, very kind of similar in the way, just in my perspective. But yeah, to your point, Sam, you know, don't mean to bash Yasiel Puig on his, you know, career.
I'll bash Yasiel Puig.
Giants fans will, but now Sam is getting in on the action. But yeah, you got a lot of great, you know, Hall of Famers, bunch of them who are now going to be on the ballot for the Hall of Fame. That's a whole nother conversation. Scott Rowland being named to the Hall of Fame. But, you know, you got guys like you mentioned, Howard, David White, who was on the cover. You've got, you know, of course, Ken Griffey, who was on the, you know,
Joe Mauer. Joe Mauer was on the cover back-to-back years for MLB 10 The Show and 11 The Show.
That was shocking because I almost thought, you know, in a weird way, they could have done the same thing with Ohtani. Judge. Yeah.
That would have been probably even more marketable than Julio would have been if they would have done Ohtani twice. And Joe Mauer is the only repeat cover athlete, which Joe Mauer was very, I mean, at that time, Joe Mauer was very good at that point. So, I mean, I don't doubt that. 6-time All-Star, AL MVP, 3-time Gold Glove Award winner, 5-time Silver Slugger, 3-time batting champ.
Yeah. Yeah, he was very good, but behind the plate, those Twins teams with him, Moreau, they were something special. Still eluded that postseason.
I know that's like, and that was one of the better teams who just never really could put it all together.
Yeah, and I know what on the last podcast, I know again, apologies to the viewers for infrequent postings, but I think we mentioned again Carlos Correa to the Mets at that point. Now he's on the Twins. So yeah, I you know, the Twins right now, going from the past to the present, they've been in that kind of middling area for a while now. It's like kind of fringe playoff team, division winner 1 or 2 years if possible. So we'll see.
We have a guy who we could talk about, Fernando Tatis Jr. Coming back after, well, obviously he's going to miss the first 20 games of the season due to his PED suspension. But, I mean, this guy at one point was one of the most marketable players in the MLB. He's kind of coming back to that now. The Padres just had their Padres Fest, and he was signing a guy's leg with his tattoo on it. So I don't think Padres fans are too upset anymore about him being suspended. But he kind of has something to prove for himself, because the Padres made it very far in the playoffs last year without him. Then this is, and Fernando Tatis is their guy. So that's kind of hard to do, really, when, especially now that the Padres signed Xander Bogaerts for a very hefty contract deal, one of the top tier shortstops who was on the market. And they have him playing at short. They don't have him playing at third, which is what he did when he first came up with the Red Sox. They don't have him playing anywhere else. But they're planning on moving Tatis to right field, another infielder who's going to be moved to the outfielder, along with Jazz Chisholm in that sense. So it's kind of, Fernando Tatis kind of has something to prove here. Is he going to be able to stay healthy and kind of reclaim his stardom? Or is he going to kind of fall to the wayside?
I think I just feel that he is too talented to fall to the wayside, Sam. I know there's probably going to be a month plus where he is still adjusting to the game, adjusting back to the pace of play, especially the position, which I feel that because they are allowed to play in spring training, at least, again, the suspended guys during the season, he can get those reps in spring training, so it will be maybe a bit easier for him to get back into action into the regular season. But just the talent that he has, I don't know. I cannot say right now that his talent is going to, you know, as you would say, fall to the wayside, which for him might be, you know, 25 homers, a 270, 260. Like, this is a guy that could hit at his best 300, 310, you know, and hit 30 to 40 homers at his best and be an MVP candidate for this team that is one of the best in the league.
Yeah, I think he's still going to be a really good player with the bat, especially.
Yeah.
I don't think that is going to falter at all. I think he's got a really good bat. It's just about whether he's going to, his stardom, maybe, essentially, not necessarily yeah. his play. I think his play is mm-hmm. going to be fine. I think he's very athletic that he can transfer to that right field spot, no problem. It's about whether he's going to come back to that like star potential. And I think it's already coming back. I mean, it was kind of, a lot of people were very upset at first, and a lot of people should have been, because, I mean, this is a star player that who's making a lot of money for your team and is now is being using PEDs and cheating the system. And I think a lot of Padres fans were hurt by that. But now I think that that's just kind of disappeared, and now he's coming back, and now the team's going to be great. So yeah. I think that it's whether his like stardom fully comes back or not, but I think talent-wise, he's going to be fine.
Yeah, for sure. Super excited to see all of the cover athletes that are still active players in action. Again, not MLB The Show is not a sponsor of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast, but we would love to be sponsored San Diego Studios and the whole company. But
San Diego Studios, yeah. Hey, if you're listening, let's talk. Let's get some talk. Let's get a contract signed here.
Yeah, exactly. Go play the game that hasn't even come out yet, because that's probably when our next episode will come out. But anyways, moving on to our final topic of the show, the NBA trade deadline as of recording Sunday, February 5th. Big news happening today in the NBA. Let's just start really the whole last week of drama breaking down. We'll start in Brooklyn with Kyrie Irving and company with the Nets, the team that, mind you, is fourth in the Eastern Conference behind the Bucks, Sixers, and Celtics. Kyrie Irving, the star point guard, requesting out of Brooklyn a few days ago, and today the bomb, the Woj bomb, the Shams bomb, whatever notification you get, whatever NBA insider you get, Kyrie Irving traded to the Dallas Mavericks to join forces with Luka Doncic, an MVP in his own right in the Western Conference who, you know, people have been talking about. He needs help. He gets help in the form of Kyrie Irving and sending back to the Nets, former Net, Spencer Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney-Smith, along with a first-round pick and a pair of second-round picks. guys, how we feeling both with the Nets? I know I have a Nets fan, a friend at the radio say, great guy, but he's an avid New York sports fan. I know you guys have one. He was yelling on Friday when Kyrie requested a trade. You know, altercations with him on Twitter were funny, but guys, Nets, Mavericks, Kyrie out. What is going on?
I mean, obviously, Spencer Dinwiddie is not at the same caliber as Kyrie Irving. Neither is Dorian Finney-Smith. I think the Nets got a little bit of maybe depth at like the small forward position and the point guard position. Spencer Dinwiddie is a fairly decent basketball player in his own right. But I think it kind of just kind of relieves a lot of drama that Nets team has experienced with Kyrie. Between him not being vaccinated and only playing half the games when New York had their COVID mandate and a couple other things that Kyrie has done in the past. But I feel like that for the most part, I think in New York, it kind of just frees up some of that drama, and they did get a decent package back. They got a first rounder. They got some draft picks for the 2029 draft, I believe.
It's some years off, yeah.
A couple of years off, but again, building for the future. I think that it kind of frees up a lot of stuff. I feel like the Mavs get a really good point guard in Kyrie. They get some power forward help with Markieff Morris. But I feel like we're just going to have to see how Luka and Kyrie kind of clash together. Two very big personalities, as Luka has kind of been developing his own, and for good reason too, because has dominated so far in the NBA with his talent, his shooting ability. He's just become a very good player in his own right. But I guess we just have to see how Kyrie and Luka kind of clash together.
You know, I agree. Me and Sam talked about this a little before the podcast, the whole trade, and I agree with pretty much everything you said. I think it was a good deal for Brooklyn. You get rid of that extra baggage, you know, with Kyrie. He's, let's be honest, you know, he's wanted out. You know, it's kind of been floated around, and obviously he's been carrying a lot of weight recently with KD's injury. You know, he's been the main focal point, star of the team, leading them in scoring. And Dallas, you know, is a team that made it to the Western Conference Finals last year. They lost to the Warriors, who were the eventual NBA champions. But you could tell in that series, you know, Luka needed somebody else. He couldn't just be a one-man show. So they go out, they get another superstar in Kyrie Irving. Sam, you're right. It's going to be interesting to see if Kyrie and Luka can mesh together and form a dynamic duo partnership. Because really, that's the key to making this whole thing work. They need to be able to work together, share the ball, and, you know, play on the floor together and not clash. So whether that happens or not, we'll see. I think it can work. You've seen Kyrie play with KD, albeit not that often, considering, you know, injuries and people being out. But they played together, and, you know, they've played fairly well together, I think, in their time on the court. So it can work. It really is just up to, I think, mainly Kyrie's attitude going into the situation in Dallas. But I think for both teams, it's really not a bad trade, again, depending mainly for Mavericks, what the attitude of Kyrie Irving is going into that situation.
Yeah, I think I agree with you guys completely, and I know Kyrie's stock, especially in trades, really dropped recently, you know, based on, you know, all the off-the-court stuff. And I know you can't really quantify that in NBA standards, but, you know, when you have a guy that, as you really kind of alluded to, Sam, as well, that, you know, creates that drama off the court, and you're wondering when he's going to be on the floor, you know, having team action taken multiple times for Kyrie, you know, that does play a factor. But I think the biggest thing, as you guys mentioned, how that the two guys, Irving and Doncic, that like to have the ball in their hands at all times, how is Coach Jason Kidd going to stagger those minutes throughout the rest of the way for a Mavericks team that has aspirations to win the Western Conference? And for Brooklyn, it sounds like that they are moving in a direction to build around Kevin Durant with future draft picks. Could this, you know, could there be more moves made before Thursday's deadline, whether that's Ben Simmons, whether that's other players around KD that could be on the move, surrounding KD? Claxton has been playing very well as well, surrounding those two, but yeah, a big trade to really start off the trade season. guys, any other players? I know there are a bunch of Raptors on the chopping block, perhaps. OG Anunoby, Fred VanVleet.
Sam
Fleet,
looks so thrilled you... that you just said that.
You're
not wrong. I mean, the Raptors are they're not really playing that well right now. They did all right last season, but they're just not the same team. And I think they're kind of going back into a rebuilding sense. I think that they're probably going to move Fred VanVleet. I know that OG Anunoby's contract is expiring and he's been playing very well. They'll probably move him too. Pascal, I don't really know what his contract looks like, but they could go into a full rebuild here. And I think that's just kind of where they're at. That team is definitely not the same as it was when they won the championship, when they won that championship with, when they had Kyle Lowry, when they had Kawhi Leonard, when they had Marc Gasol, when they had all those guys. And I think that the team is just going to have to rebuild and restart.
I agree. And I know that they're in a position to do that. Some other teams in the East that are kind of fringe there, you know, maybe on the downswing. And then you've got teams at the top, like the Sixers, the Nuggets. I know the Lakers aren't at the top, but it sounds like they want to buy and get better players around LeBron James and also an Anthony Davis-less team still. Russell Westbrook has been mentioned in trade rumors. And guys on the Jazz like Vanderbilt, like Markkanen, you got some teams like that in the overperform, but still to sell off good pieces. Pistons are in kind of that realm with the Raptors in a different, you know, level of the rebuilding stage, of course, but have guys that would be expendable.
I feel like the Pistons have at least like with like Cade Cunningham, Killian Hayes, I feel like they have a lot of good young players who they can at least build around. I don't like, obviously the Raptors with their like guy with some of those guys like Pascal and Fred VanVleet, a lot of those guys are ready to, I don't know if they're necessarily ready to move on to different teams, but they definitely could, and they could perform very well for those teams. I just don't really think the Raptors have like a young like core that they can necessarily build around. I don't think they have a big veteran who they can build around. But I feel like the Pistons and a lot of those other teams who have been acquiring draft picks and have acquired like a lot of really good young players can like kind of like go on the upside.
Yeah, and it really goes back. I know, I guess I didn't mean to, I guess, compare the cores necessarily, but more of those expendable veteran players that teams, yeah, like those teams at the top would want to add to either the bench or the starting lineup. And you know, all goes back to the offseason, how Pistons signing a guy like Bogdan Bogdanovic is, it could really shift how now he's a guy that you can get multiple draft picks for, almost, again, continuing that rebuild, stocking up draft picks from a good team to flip a guy that, you know, has been performing well for a team that's, you know, nowhere near a playoff contention. So very interested to see. Guys, any final comments before we wrap up the show today?
Tom Brady's retired, finally.
Tom Brady has retired. I can't believe we didn't
like
think
official,
of that.
And, like, actually retired.
Nate, if I get this correctly from your comment in the Zoom, ladies and gentlemen, we are getting through another anniversary of the Lunch Hour Sports podcast.
It already passed.
It already passed.
This past Wednesday, February 1st, 2023.
Wow. 3 years. 3 years ago this podcast started, and 3 years later, we're still doing it. Thank you all for listening. Thank you, Anchor, for once again sponsoring this episode of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast. You can check out future episodes of the Lunch Hour Sports Podcast on YouTube and Spotify. Once again, thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you next time.